Welcome to Casement's Leftovers. You've joined us again. Thank you so much. The Tiffany New York Pollard of podcasts. Thank you for joining us. Except you, Leo Varadkar, you can choke. Thank you so much. We are joined today by the dulcet tones, Helen, calling in from Berlin. How are you, Helen?
I'm good. Hello, listeners. And hello to our guests today.
Yes, we are joined by Councillor Peter Kavanagh and Councillor of Dublin City Council.
No, South Dublin County Council.
Oh, South Dublin County Council.
Yeah,
excuse
way
you.
Out in the sticks, outside the M50, baby.
Where is that?
I'm the Councillor for Clondalkin.
Oh, I see. Oh.
It's not a million
miles
away.
Are you based in Tala?
Well, no, County Hall is in Tala, yeah.
Yeah.
I'm from Clondalkin.
Okay, very good. And we are joined as well by Kevin Byrne, the spokesperson for Ogra Hin Fein. Thank you so much for joining us again, Kevin.
Pleasure to be here, as always.
Thank you. Okay, so we are going to get into it. The thing that's happened has happened. The left has grown substantially. What's your initial take on this, Peter, coming into it?
Yeah, a real vote for change, like in a big way, in a massive way. And I don't think anybody could have seen the Sinn Féin surge in particular. I think we were backing ourselves in the Greens to have a good election, but I don't think anybody would have seen the growth of the Social Democrats in that way as well. So it's a massive growth for that sort of well thought out moderate leftist approach. And unfortunately, the loss of a very good left politician and parliamentarian in Ruth Coppinger has seen the numbers in Solidarity PBP decline, or Solidarity PBP rise. I don't know what way they're going to caucus themselves in the new Dáil, but
there's talk about Solidarity and PBP breaking up though, apparently.
But I
think they have to have five to have speaking rights in the Dáil.
They'll probably caucus because they'll form a technical group. But I mean, the Greens and the Social Democrats did that, and Labour in the last Dáil, just to share speaking time. You know, if you can do something with someone you're even broadly aligned with, you can do that. But a massive decline as well for the Labour Party, hugely so. And I think they had backed themselves thinking that a couple of years in opposition would do them a world of good and they'd be able to spring forward and launch a new generation. But I think they failed to find the candidates to represent that in a lot of places. I know that they had some really good progressive young candidates and delighted to see, for example, Councillor Duncan Smith become Deputy Duncan Smith. It's you know, he's a solid politician. But like people like Rebecca Moynihan losing out and probably losing out because, like, when that Sinn Féin surge happened on Sunday when we started to see Sinn Féin TDs get returned on the first count with no running mate, it was sort of a roll the dice and see where on the left the transfers are going to fall. And we benefited in a few constituencies. Solidarity People Before Profit benefited in others, and some of them went mad, like, you know what I mean? Yeah. Even there were some Fianna Fáil TDs dragged over the line by Sinn Féin surpluses in some parts of the country where there weren't the left options, you know what I mean? And people were voting to probably keep the previous government out. They were voting down like good proportional representative Democrats, you know. But look, to be honest with you, I think even Sinn Féin themselves were pretty stunned. The local elections last year informed their selection policy. So there's a lot of places now where they'll look back. And I think the selection policy was the right one because the only evidence they had was the local elections.
Absolutely.
But they'll look back and think, like, okay, we could have had a second TD in Dublin Central, a second TD in Dublin South Central, could have had a third TD in Donegal, a second one in Kerry, and so on and so forth right around the country. But look, at the end of the day, they've done brilliantly. There's no doubt about it. They've won the election, and the hard questions are, you know, who's going to break and put them in government?
Kevin, what was your initial reaction? What were you doing? Well, do you remember where you were?
Well, I mean,
like, what was the initial reaction in, like, Sinn Féin HQ when it started to come out that something had actually connected and a sea shift had happened in a way that hadn't been seen before?
Yeah, I mean, that came kind of well before counting day. There was little moments throughout the campaign that we kind of knew things were going really, really well for us. As you know, Peter said there, or Peter, sorry,
either. So as we got the introduction right,
I know you remember,
which we got half right.
As you said, Sinn Féin was on a defensive footing coming into the election. We had pretty miserable May 2019 local elections. We just didn't energise people. It was, and you know, there's a certain amount that whenever you're knocking on the doors in the local elections, you can't actually promise people that you're going to be able to change everything.
Of course, you
can only promise them that you will do the best you can with it within the limitations of local government. So, yeah,
and demographics are also different when it comes to, in terms of socioeconomic voting is different based on general elections and local elections. Different types of people, as I'm sure Peter can attest, come out for different types of elections.
Yeah, and that was absolutely part of it. So, like, what happened was after May 2019, Sinn Féin had a kind of soul searching moment, and that was led very, very much from the top by Mary Lou. She kind of went around all of us, like everybody from the most senior member of the party to the staff in the Dáil to local councillors. I was asked, and I was just an activist on the ground kind of thing, and just basically said, like, what went wrong? What went wrong in your mind? Where can we go from here? I mean, a really, really frank, kind of brutal at times discussion about what went wrong, where we need to be as a party, how we get on thing, and we just put it all into thing. We basically said that in 2016 we were the beneficiaries of public anger around the water charges protest, and anger is great. Anger is great for boosting up your numbers temporarily, but it's not sustainable. Once the water charges issue was subsided, like. The vote
what is Sinn Féin about now?
Exactly. Like really so basically, what we decided is, it really is this vague. It's not enough to be the party of anger. It's you have to take the anger that kind of froze us into these positions, and then turn that into hope for actual change, and basically demonstrate to people that real change is possible if you have the right people in the job, if you have well thought out, well costed. Expertly laid out policies, and that connect to the material needs of working people in this country, and that's what the Sinn Féin surge was about. Yes, also the communications of the policies were very good. We had a blinder of a campaign in terms of communications, but really, if I was going to point out one thing about why it worked this time, basically great policies. Owen O'Brien, Piers Daugherty, Louise O'Reilly, just.
Yeah,
played a blinder.
And I mean, there is a kind of an echo of that type of Dark Night of the Soul reinvention from the Greens, when after coming out of government, there was a reinvention, a reinvigoration. And it's not just, I think a lot of people talk about the kind of global side, like, I mean, Green Party benefiting from a global interest and recentering of Green policies. But it does feel like the Greens are kind of, the Greens have changed quite substantially from when they were last in government.
Well, I think it was kind of a perfect storm of all of those factors, to be honest with you. I just want to go back to one thing just on the Sinn Féin surge, though, because it is the elephant in the room, is that Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael absolutely botched this one in a big way by trying to make Sinn Féin the baddies. They did try very hard to play the provos under the bed card quite a lot. And
go on, RTE, keep showing absolute bias. That is definitely not helping us at the doors.
But like, and to be honest with you, if RTE had actually kept Mary Lou off the leaders' debate, the Sinn Féin vote could have been even higher, because people realised they were being given this thing like, you're not scared of the Shinners, and people go, no, I'm more scared of the fact that my kids will never own a house.
You know,
I'm more scared of the fact that the inevitable breakdown of the climate might kill us all. But for the Greens, for us, we're the only party to have ever come back from losing all of our nationally elected representatives in the history of the state. So we survived a total wipeout. And, you know, there were harsh lessons to be learned from the period in government. Like, we're quite proud of the good things we did achieve. But the problem is that, and we've learned this lesson, and we have to learn it now in the substantive talks for forming any kind of new government, be it leftist or be it traditionalist. There's no point in getting 4 or 5 years of incremental gains only to have them wiped out by the next neoliberal government to come in. And like, we had such, like, we had some of the most progressive housing legislation ever. We banned bedsits. We actually did some really, really good stuff on housing while we were in government. And it was all completely wiped out by the Fine Gael Labour and then Fine Gael Independence, which with Fianna Fáil's confidence and supply governments. So for 9 years, an awful lot of what we did was completely undone. And we have to realise that you know, we can't just go in and look for incremental gain now. So we've learned that lesson, and that was what we were able to communicate to people on the doors. And yeah, the green wave kind of, there was this idea, and certainly it was born out in some parts of the country, that we could have just basically, we could have put a puppy in a suit and put it up on a poster and it would have got a seat for the Greens. Like, you know, like,
it's like, vote for this blank piece of paper, we'll fill in the name
later. Yeah, we'll fill in the name later, yeah. Which, to be fair, I mean, none of our candidates took a holiday during the election campaign still got in. But we did benefit from a surge. But a lot of the work for the so-called green wave was put in on the ground. It was talking to people, and it was trying to balance the fact that you know, people are concerned about climate change, but they're very concerned about what it means to them. And as people start to see the real effects of climate change, they start to realize, you know, there's a sort of an oh shit moment, we better do something about this. And, and people were willing to talk about that, but also like just progressive policies on healthcare, housing, childcare, public transport, like the kind of climate action that actually improves people's quality of life really resonated with people. It spoke to people. And on any other day, if Sinn Féin had not had such a tremendous election, an absolute victory, we would be talking about the green surge to double our highest ever number of TDs, to go from 2.2% in the last election to over 7% in this election, to come basically back from the dead in the space of two elections and become the fourth biggest party in the state.
Yeah.
Like that would be the story in any other narrative. But we're just talking.
Peter,
yeah.
You obviously, sorry to cut over you. But yeah, so you guys have like had such a big success in this election, but obviously what everyone's talking now, like the Irish Examiner, Irish Daily Mail, the Irish Post, are all talking about a super grand coalition between you, Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael. What's your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I read the Irish Examiner headline on that piece. The actual article itself has no references to the so-called grand coalition. There's no sources mentioned. I know Harry McGee from the Irish Times was tweeting about the same thing, and his only source was a senior Fianna Fáil TD. So what I would really love is if somebody did what you did and just ask someone in the Green Party what they think about that. And look, to be honest with you, we know within the party that everybody voted for change. And we realise that if we're going to be the ones that facilitate no change, that we facilitate business as usual, well, that's not only not going to be good for the party, it's probably not going to be good for the state as well. So, look, we can't rule anything out because everything's got to go by our membership. We are the most democratic of parties in that sense because we have to have a 66% vote in favour of any programme for government. So in many ways, we get kind of criticised and we're kind of open to targeting in the media because we can't rule anything out until it goes to the membership. But it would take one hell of a programme for government from those two establishment parties to turn the heads of the membership because, look, when we went into government last time, if you remember 13 years ago, 2007, Ireland was on an absolute high. Like, you know what I mean? Nobody could do any wrong. It was class. Let's get into government and do a bit of climate action. It'd be deadly. We'll really get some stuff done here. And then the arse fell out of the world economy. And we really...
We're left holding the bomb.
Yeah, like it was just, and look, some of the decisions we took were good, some of the decisions we took were awful, and we paid the price for it. But I think we're a little bit wiser now. So it really, to be honest with you, it does piss me off just being thrown in there, like as if we'll make up the numbers with anyone without discussing with anyone, you know. Mm-hmm. And our new TD for Dublin West, Roderick O'Gorman, was on the 6-1 the other night discussing exactly this and saying, like, we're not there to make up the numbers, and we won't just go in with anyone. It all comes down to a programme for government that has to be approved by the members, and I don't think the members have an appetite to just continue business as usual for the sake of it, because it's not the members who are going to get the goodies or get the appointments or get to draft the legislation. They want to see real climate action. They want to see real improvement in quality of life.
From a Sinn Féin perspective, I at this stage I've got no real reason to doubt the sincerity of Peter's comments. Yeah. I genuinely do think that from the comments that I've seen from lots of like kind of the left-leaning membership of the Greens, particularly Saoirse McHugh. Who's the candidate who ran in Cavan Monaghan?
Tate Donnelly.
Yeah, and those guys are basically like, yeah, you go in to coalition with Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael over my dead body, essentially. And I think lessons have been learned by the Greens, and that gives me hope.
Mm-hmm. Like, I mean, to be in fairness to the journalists, which is probably giving them too much at all, but like, I mean, fair enough. So like, I mean, really the suggestion would be then that it's not one, it's not two, it's three publications that have all have have all got it completely and utterly wrong. RTE have got it completely and utterly wrong. The political team there and the Irish Times, most political correspondents are literally just talking to Fianna Fáilers, because most of the that's where it's coming from most of the time. O'Keefe put out a tweet there yesterday or the day before saying Fianna Fáil, Fine Gael, Grand Coalition with the Greens, I'm against this. So, you know, it's like, I mean, there is a thing which gets us onto our next point, which is this a feeling, and it's not directed at the Greens, it's normally directed at Sinn Féin. I think, I mean, the Greens are the respectable party of the left most of the time.
Nobody's scared of you.
Sometimes the Greens
fuck
get,
it should be.
Sometimes the Greens get probably, you know, get kind of run down as these kind of like hippies, like you know, these kind of like effete debutantes in South Dublin bars talking about policies that they shouldn't be talking about, and, you know, just kind of like wanting to like wear flowers in there. And like, I mean, that's as destructive in a lot of respects, but a lot of the ire that's been coming through the media in the last 3 weeks, I'd say, has been, yeah, you've got like, you know, the provost under the bed and that type of rhetoric. And I wanted to kind of get your opinion on it, Kevin, and then you can follow up with it, Peter. This whole idea of the jilted media that now seems to happen, and it is being led by Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael. They're both active. Like, any time I come across a TD on from Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael on RTE News or on the radio, it does seem that they are a kind of like a jilted lover.
Oh yeah,
who is, you know, has really with the public. It's directed at the public, as in, you silly people.
You should have
Sinn Féin. They're communists. They're going to destroy the country. And I guess I wanted to hear your opinion about what you think is actually happening in the media, because it does seem, with the amount of concentration that they've been placed on it, and Peter touched on this a while back in terms of like the baddies and stuff, but mm-hmm. it does seem that the media have been running a very rigorous campaign against Sinn Féin, yeah, in terms of their respectability. And some of those positions are, you know, people want to know, for you know, like, oh, why was a comment laid against a murdered man 13 years ago? I think it's kind of interesting that 13 years ago it's happened and now it's of interest, but like, I mean, it still remains the same. The questions remain outstanding. And so what do you think about
yeah,
that?
Well, I'll start off beginning, but just to say it was incredibly gratifying to be in the count on the Sunday and seeing absolutely ashen-faced Fianna Fáil, Fine Gael, RTE and Indo journalists knocking around. They looked bereaved. I just literally hook it up to my veins. I was laughing. Hugh O'Connell was in particular. He literally was just like, he looked shell-shocked. But yeah, no, like, and in fairness to him, he was very professional today, but he did look absolutely distraught. And yeah, I think basically the kind of mindset that this comes from is that, not to put too fine a point on it, a lot of the people in the media in this country are hacks. Like, they're literally there to enforce the kind of the narrative of a two-party neoliberal system. That's how they've made their careers. That's how they get it. By the way, it is a very, very safe career path to pursue a viciously anti-Sinn Féin journalistic career, because nobody will ever really challenge you, and you will get paid loads of money for it. Mm-hmm. So, but yeah, I mean, like, the absolute outrage that these people showed for working class people voting for a break, just a break, not a revolution, just give us a break, you know, was palpable. You know, they were just kind of, just the kind of this outrage that, and I mean, you know, let's not make a mistake. What people in the Indo and the RTE and these incredibly anti-Sinn Féin publications are angry about is that working people voted in their own interests. That's what, and against their ideology. It's that simple. Like, they are annoyed that people haven't gone with, after, you know, neoliberalism led us into a disaster, a financial disaster, which was followed by brutal austerity measures, which the people had to pay for, which was followed by a recovery that benefited nobody except the people who made the financial disaster in the first place. They're now absolutely screaming about people finally voting for in their own interests and saying we're just going to have to start giving workers and families a break, redistributing wealth back down to the working people of this country. They're raging about it. And I mean, yeah, I mean, I'm sure I know that I'm underplaying the kind of anger, and there is a lot of anger about, like, you know, Sinn Féin's role in the previous conflict and stuff like that. But I think really, if you kind of like scrape the surface of it, a lot of it is just anger at the policies, anger at the left wing turn.
Yeah,
I don't know if it's that policy driven though. You know what I mean? I think it's. I agree that there's a sort of an anger, but like there's an anger that it's rocked the coziness of the established media. You know, yeah. The long established media. There's a lot of coziness. Like we did mention, and I'm not impugning anyone's journalistic integrity or credentials here, but objectively looking at it, there's an awful lot of political journalists who are quite either closely related to or involved with people who are in politics. Like the political editor of the Irish Daily Mail. His wife was a candidate for one of the big two, you know.
Rory Coveney's brother is the director of strategy. Or no,
Simon Coveney.
Simon Coveney's brother Rory is the director of strategy for the RTE.
Yeah, so there's like there's just so much of it, like, you know, so much of it, and it permeates right the way through. Like, you know, Ryan Tuberty's family is Fianna Fáil royalty. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Even though one of them is a shinner now, but it's
maybe
like
we get good press after all.
Yeah, maybe so. You might see a turn there. The Chris is in.
You're all horrible except Chris. We love Chris.
Yeah, we let him in because his brother is Barry.
Oh, cheers.
But it is there is this sort of this, and it kind of looking at it from a distance, it's kind of weird. Like, and every media outlet has its bias, you know. Every media outlet has its bias. You cannot escape that. We're in one sense lucky and in one sense unlucky that with the mainstream media in Ireland, they at least have the pretense of objectivity. Not like in Britain, where the red tops are almost entirely pro-Tory, you know, some of the broadsheets are, and then you have the Guardian is soft left, but was very anti-Corbyn until it became inevitable that Corbyn would be leader of the Labour Party. So it's you know. We don't have that naked bias, but the insidious bias is probably a little bit more damaging. And the fact that the results have sort of thrown that into question is really, I think that's probably more. It's I don't think it's likely that you know, political editors and political journalists sat down, read the manifestos, and got incensed at Sinn Féin's manifesto. But there's certainly a feeling that they're not happy with the results.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, and also, like, I thought it was interesting because the narrative was, on one hand, that Sinn Féin were about to give everybody everything that they wanted and had no way to pay for it, but that we were also simultaneously going to tax people into exile.
Yeah.
Like, pick a position. We're either collecting, we're either taxing or we're not. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, so, yeah, I mean, look.
One of the craziest bits of it, though, on the policy side of things, is just, like, every time Sinn Féin were interviewed on RTE, they were treated as if they were some kind of Maoist radicals.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Like,
I mean, just like, this is social democracy.
Yeah, exactly. with the greatest of respect to your manifesto, it's very progressive and all that, but like, it's not a little red book.
Yeah. No, I can remember going, I was like, this is like, and this was the line, I think.
Well, you do recommend that you renationalise the ways, and so does the Greens as well, which is communism.
Yeah, absolutely.
Just straight up communism.
We're going to nationalise Mars if they don't bring us back those Mars delights, to tell you that. Lucasaid.
What page was that on?
Sorry, go on, Kevin. I was interrupting you there.
I've lost my train of thought, actually.
So, okay. Yeah. What was your position then, Peter, in terms of the media's initial reaction, which did feel kind of like sour grapes with the Greens? And the Greens did get a kind of an... Like, there was a jubilance in RTE after the Green Wave, first of all, because they were able to coin a very trite term.
Yeah, yeah.
And they were able to be just like, you know, it's a good story. There's a seed shift in politics. The Greens are growing. This is an interesting story to follow.
Well, we had a good local election, and it was kind of felt in the media that we would have a good local election. And I think that's down to there were a lot of journalists doing, like, because there are so many brilliant journalists doing real journalism out there, and I think we tend to focus on a few people who kind of get their names on the headlines and put a bad spin on things. But like there were a lot of people out on the campaign trail, like with us, with the Greens and with other parties. And Jennifer Bray from the Irish Times came out canvassing with me and with a few other people from smaller parties for a profile piece. And you know, she saw people come up and actually raise the issue of climate change on the doors rather than me having to say, I'm with the Greens, what's the biggest issue? Like, the climate change is the biggest issue for me, how about you?
Yeah.
You know, because there was that sort of change in the local campaign. I noticed that around January 2019, people were saying it to me rather than me saying, hey, I'm with the Greens, but don't worry, it's not all about climate change. Let me tell you about cost rental housing. Can I talk to you about public transport for a minute?
Yeah.
But then all of a sudden people were going, oh, the Greens, Jesus, climate change is a big issue. Yeah, no problem. I think I'll vote for you. Like, so a lot of journalists saw that. And it was a validation then. When we got 49 councillors in the Republic, and we added to that in the North shortly afterwards, it was a validation of the media. They were saying this is absolutely, and likewise in November in the by-election, we had a very strong performance right across the four by-elections, and we won a by-election for the first time in the party, and that happened right after RTE's Climate Week, where they had a whole week of programmes talking about the inevitable loss of biodiversity and the breakdown of climate. And again, there was a sort of a validation there. So it's sort of, in one sense, they called it.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, there was a sense of jubilance. Now, I don't think enough of a sense of jubilance, as I say. It was kind of completely and totally outweighed by this dismal sense of despair that the Shinners were going to be in charge. And, you know, oh my God, is it Taoiseach Mary Lou? We might as well just shut the paper down. They're only going to have Pravda, the crazy communists. But to be honest with you, I didn't see a lot of the media on Sunday or Monday because I was still kind of wrapped up in my own count and that of my colleagues.
Which, you tripled your vote, didn't you, as well?
Yeah, I tripled my own personal vote from the by-election into the general election, so it was good growth. I just have this just a local issue in the constituency. A former member of the Green Party is running as an independent, and we split the vote right down the middle. So if there was one Green candidate, we would have taken a seat probably away from People Before Profit, so it wouldn't have been brilliant. It wouldn't have added anything for the extra leftists in the Dáil, but it would have been great for us. But yeah, no, we're really happy because, like, even where we didn't get a seat, it was really competitive. We were really, really close, so it was fantastic. People like Tate Donnelly and Saoirse McHugh doing incredibly well in places where there has never been a Green vote. Like Saoirse McHugh going from 0% to almost, I think, 7 in the, like, just amazing for Mayo. Like, it's unreal. Like, but yeah, look, I think they could have been a bit more jubilant, to be honest with you. Frankly, they should have been a bit more jubilant.
We deserve more credit.
We deserve more credit.
Well, like, I mean, I do think that there is an amount of, I think that there's a kind of a culture in, I hate to say mainstream media because it's not true even, but like, I mean, traditional media, there is a kind of, I don't know if it's a kind of almost like a cultural tick, but it's seen that if you aren't kind of like incredibly, even like this, like, even if the journalists themselves have like leftist leanings, they have to be considered a credible, serious force. They have to be incredibly brutal to an awful lot of the leftist campaigns that are actually taking place in Ireland. And they have to see the only rational position is that of the main two being still a kind of centerpiece of Irish politics. But like, I mean,
you're right. That's absolutely right. But just look at, for one example of that, like, and even like, I get what you're saying, that it's usually against leftist movements, it's against the Water Charges movement, or it's against the protests at Jobstown and things like that. But it's actually, it informs everything. Look at the framing of the climate change questions in the leaders' debates.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, this is the single greatest crisis humanity has ever faced, and you're asking Eamon Ryan, how many cows do you propose to kill?
Yeah.
Like, it's nonsense. It's senseless. It's stupid. This is something that's going to affect every single person in the country, and it's going to irreparably change our lives. And you're saying, butcher, there are multimillionaire big farmers who might lose out, so how are you going to stand over that? And everything is framed within the narrative of 100 years of hegemonic Irish centrist policies.
Yeah, and also the media doesn't hold you know, out there policies of the right-wing parties to anywhere near the same level of scrutiny.
Yeah.
Let's just talk about Fine Gael were proposing to have more tax cuts for already very wealthy people in a country where they were already paying not that much tax on thing in the middle of a housing crisis, in the middle of a health crisis. Literally, it was like vandalism. It was actual, like, it would have just destroyed public services even more. Mm. It was so nakedly selfish, and nobody mentioned it.
Yeah,
like nobody.
No, it wasn't brought up in any of the debates. Like Fianna Fáil's stance on inheritance tax.
Yeah,
for example, exactly. Something that is going to encourage land hoarding.
Yeah.
It's going to encourage vacant properties being held mm-hmm. within families rather than being sold and brought back onto the market.
Or the SSIA
stuff.
Yeah,
the SSIA.
And I'm just like literally bumping up the price of houses for your developer mates and in the middle of a housing crisis. And like nobody really analysed that. Nobody took it seriously. But if Sinn Féin were going to cut the first 30 grand in USC, you absolutely...
You monsters.
How dare you give a tax break to the poorest people?
Yeah, there just seems to be an awful lot of a kind of assumed credibility based on any policies that are actually coming out of the right. Like, I mean, for me, it's strange because I think that an awful lot of the policy documents that, like, anybody who's studied anything about policy, if you take one policy position and then look, the Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael parties are basically sharing the exact same policy platform. Oh, yeah. They're coming out of the same people who are writing the policies for Fianna Fáil are writing the same policies for Fine Gael. They might tweak around the edges, but essentially they're always going to be running off the same or singing off the same hymn sheet.
Yeah.
So there is no kind of ideological difference. And because, as you were mentioning, Peter, there has been this sort of hegemonic force where they are the only show in town. Like, that is like politics and the media in Ireland, especially the national broadcaster, have literally grown up together and developed cultures together. And it's very hard then for you to kind of work your way backwards through institutional habits and memory. For example, for RTE, like they're not going to be able to, you know, if they can't pick up their ratings generally across the way, they're not going to be able to, you know, rediscover a fresh, unbiased political investigative staff.
And I thought it was interesting. Enda Fanning, who's one of our kind of supporters, media guy, suggested in a fairly moderate tweet that the clear bias in favour of the two main right-wing parties in the state for the election kind of shows a need for a rebalance, a redress, especially in the kind of publicly owned state media, to make sure it's actually politically neutral or as near as possible. I know it's not possible, but at least, you know, get the balance right instead of showing a clear bias. And guess what happened? Sinn Féin were...
Fake news.
Sinn Féin are Stalinists.
You're going to censor. The Section 37 censorship you guys suffered,
exactly.
You're going to go Section 31, whatever.
Return. I know, 31. Jesus Christ. And I was just like, oh my God. And it, like the outrage, the absolute outrage of it. And I was like, well, look, we were getting votes in from people who almost certainly had voted Fianna Fáil for most of their lives, mm-hmm. because we were knocking the doors and then going, oh, it's terrible. It's terrible what they're doing, the RTE are doing. They're really closing ranks around you. They must be afraid of you.
Yeah.
Because you must present actual change, essentially. And yeah, I mean, it literally worked to our advantage.
The other thing worth considering is, like, we have a lot of underpaid journalists and broadcasters in Ireland. We have a lot of very hard-working journalists and broadcasters who are barely scraping by, barely getting the living wage, and are working incredibly hard. And they're not the ones who are coming out with both guns blazing for Sinn Féin or for PBP or for Solidarity or even for the Greens. We get tired with the high tax party brush all the time. Like, you know, and they're not the ones coming out after us. It's the ones on absolutely savage amounts of money who are coming after us, you know, in a big way. It's the ones who look, can we step back objectively? And this goes right back to, was it the presidential debate or was it a leaders debate a couple of years ago where, you know, Miriam O'Callaghan refused to ask questions on what level of salary she was on. You know, she was asking, I think, was it Gerry Adams? I think she was asking Gerry in a leaders debate questions about salary. And he's like, are you not on more than 100 grand? Are you asking me about a wealth tax because you're on more than 100 grand? Is that what this is? I refuse to answer, you know.
Yeah, like, I mean, it is hard as well. Like, I mean, one of the things about being a journalist is often that you're going into incredibly precarious labor, and it requires an awful lot of people at entry level to work for free for 2 or 3 years. And that obviously works as a kind of a sieve for an awful lot of working class voices who might have different positions politically, and, you know, filters all of that out into this kind of like concentrated kind of milieu of kind of bourgeois positions.
You can see people evolve that way, though. You know, you can see people evolve that way. People who get their start on something like the Journal or in community radio or writing for the Dublin Inquirer or any of these mm-hmm. amazing outlets around the country that give a chance for people to do honest, real journalism, even political journalism, and get to the nub of issues and address them. As they go up the ladder, as the sort of position becomes more secure, mm-hmm. it you know, it's a double-edged sword. It becomes more precarious as well. They can't upset the apple cart when they get to the indoor yeah. or they yeah. get to the business post.
What's that line that Chomsky said? It's like, I'm not saying that you're paid to believe what you do believe. I'm saying that you wouldn't be here if you believed something else.
Yeah, that's fantastic. Yeah. And you know yeah. what? It is interesting, you know, to think of Joe Duffy as somebody who was once an ardent socialist. Mm. It's just funny to me.
I've got to be honest. I missed the whole Joe Duffy anti Sinn Féin thing. I've never really listened to him anyway. So
I listen to him sometimes at work.
Yeah, sure.
Anyways, we're going to move on. I just want to talk to you quickly about how the voting bases have changed, the political landscape has changed. Now, an awful lot of, you did mention this at the start, Peter, about the whole notion of the protest vote, and I think that that's kind of it's a credible position to take. But there has been a downward motion for a long time in terms of Sinn Féin, but Fianna Fáil, Fine Gael. The voting, so I'm looking at a graph now. First preference vote, it's in the notes. First preference vote by block, 2016 and 2020. You have Fine Gael and Fianna Fáil on a collective, 49%, maybe 49.5%. And at the moment, and then the progressive block being 30%. And you see that now going down to 44% and the progressive bloc being 41%. So the progressive bloc has grown, and it does seem to be a trend now that's moving in that direction and has been moving in that direction for the last 20 to 30 years. You've been looking at this as well, Helen, haven't you?
Mm. Yeah, so if we look, we can see that like Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael's collective vote share has been in a decline since the 80s. And I do think that, like, while it is clear that there were people voted for change, I think that the narrative of a protest vote can be like mildly condescending sometimes, as if people sort of voted just for like mm-hmm. the other person there and they didn't, you know, read a lot of manifestos and actually put a lot of thought into what they were voting. What do you guys think about, do you think that it is like this huge change now that's kind of happened now, or do you think it's been gradually happening for a while?
Yeah, I think it's been gradually happening for a long time. I think what's happened is really, I mean, Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael's kind of position in Irish society is kind of managerial. It's not really, you know, their policies are kind of delivered to them by the same think tanks we were talking about this earlier that are broadly in line with financial interests. You know what I mean? They're like the whole point of it is to manage public opinion, while neoliberal policies don't work out for the majority of people mm-hmm. in this country, if you know what I mean, kind of manage anger. And I think people are just sick of it. I think people have seen through it. I think Fianna Fáil's desperate trying to rebrand itself as the Party of Change was seen right through by everybody. Like there was yeah. nobody seriously thought that they were gonna get in. And in fact, I think one interesting thing that Micheál Martin said that was telling in the first debate just between him and Leo Varadkar was if you just take the politics out of it, don't we want a new team? Don't we need new wow. personnel? And that I was like, that's very
he said
very
the
telling.
Quiet part
because
loud.
It, yeah, because it was exactly yeah, I was like, that's it. There's no difference between these. It's just if you want a new government, the same policies, but a yeah. new government, vote for Fianna Fáil.
It's like the Simpsons Stacey yeah. doll, now at new hat.
Yeah, exactly. And I think people are kind of sick of it. I think working people in this country have just had enough. We are crying out for some democratic socialist policies to redistribute wealth back down the line.
I'm sort of broadly in agreement. It's certainly something that's happening gradually. I don't think it's as policy oriented, but I just think that like people are finally starting to realise that Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael don't really have much to stand on. Like You know, they don't really like, and they have failed to speak to new voters. So they're mm-hmm. failing to grow their vote base. There's a natural attrition of their older vote base. It starts to decline as people, you know, they get older, they die. Mm-hmm. And if you can't recruit new supporters, you will eventually dwindle away. So the number of new people being attracted to Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael is getting smaller and smaller and smaller. And the only reason anyone's voting or joining Fianna Fáil or Fine Gael, genuinely, I have yet to meet somebody who has joined Fine Gael or Fianna Fáil off the back of their policies or a particular policy that they liked or anything like that. The one exception maybe being a bunch of people who would have joined YFG after the repeal referendum, thinking that YFG, you know, they're socially liberal. I can get down with that. I like that. They're literally joining them because they are the two biggest parties. That's the only
they
thing.
They want a job in that's, politics. That's they the, know that's, yeah, that's the trick.
That's the only thing their brand has is we are Irish politics. And they failed to change their own narrative or change their own marketing speak. Like, Jesus Christ, Fine Gael are still running as the party of fiscal rectitude. I wouldn't trust them to balance a checkbook. You know what I mean? Like, genuinely, they're like, I don't know how they're look. There's an overspend every single year in health. Like, my day job is in the older people sector, you know. And like, I remember when Leo Varadkar was Minister for Health, he was explaining an €800 million overspend in health, saying there's a lot more over 65s this year. I said they were 64 last year. You know, this is not rocket science, you know, and yet you're still going out there going like, oh, what are you going to do? Vote Sinn Féin?
I think
people did.
Yeah, I think that kind of comes to the neoliberal territory because they don't like big government. They don't like well put together infrastructure projects or well planned things. They like it whenever it's kind of passed down to a low level, which lots of their mates in local firms can build a lot of money off. Yeah. For example,
I don't know if it's as clear cut as that. There's an element to it with the public private partnerships, but I mean, like, I don't think. I mean, if there is ever a difference between Fine Gael and Fianna Fáil, it's certainly Fine Gael. They fit the narrative you've just put out there, right there, 100% down to a T. They do not like big government, and they like to see that devolve down to like that's how we get HAP. You know what I mean? That's how we get HAP. Like, let's get money into landlords' pockets. That gets it off the balance books. We don't need to worry about it. But Fianna Fáil love big infrastructure projects. Like, I know they can enrich the people who do it through public private partnerships. But I don't think there is clear cut neoliberal. Like, they're, you know what I mean? We have to be kind of fluid in our interpretation of policy around that. Like, we've had 100 years of this Irish political culture, and like, it has gone through all the iterations of politics as we've known it. Like, you know what I mean? In the 1932 election, De Valera was being painted as a red. Like, you know what I mean? If you want a communist, vote De Valera. Otherwise, Cumann na Gael is the only way, you know? And then, of course, like, Fine Gael, born out of the Blue Shirts, the Army Comrade Association, you know what I mean? An anti-communist sort of pseudo-fascist organisation. I'm not going to go so far as to call them actual fascists because they were too incompetent.
But didn't Franco say they were too much even for him and he sent them when they fought?
They were the only contingent in Franco's army to go back to Spain with more men than they were.
They got sent home. They got sent home. They basically spent the time getting pissed in Madrid and then were sent home because they were drinking the place dry.
And then, like, fast forward, they've gone through, like, social democracy in the 70s. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like, Fianna Fáil are responsible for some of the biggest socially progressive housing projects in the entire history of the state. They've gone through that.
And I think that's an important point because, like, republicanism has filled... I'm just talking about broad church republicanism.
Smaller republicanism.
You got there before. Smaller,
has filled the void left in with a kind of lack of any actual social democratic party. I know the Labour Party existed, but the Labour Party didn't create the welfare states in Ireland. And the Fianna Fáil basically played the role that the Labour Party would have played in the UK. Yeah. Essentially, and I think that's kind of where Sinn Féin are now. Where we've kind of we were talking about the decline of Labour at the start of the thing. We are now the big party of working people and all over the country, from the from kind of the traditional working class to the lower middle class to just struggling people everywhere.
You do see an awful lot of political commentators now. It's kind of like the kind of point du jour to reference. Oh well, like, I mean, Ireland. This is Ireland becoming a European country where we're doing like small coalitions that are slightly fragile, but actually are more rigorously democratic because of A, B, and C. And you can kind of see, well, yeah, of course, but this has been true for a very long time. We haven't been a block of a voting one or, like, you know, monolithic political group or a political voting base for a very long time. So it's like nice for them to pick up on that. But
but to be fair, we've never had a Taoiseach, we've never had a senior party in government that wouldn't be pigeonholed centre right in the European political spectrum.
I was going to say,
it's kind of what they're saying. It's like we finally have the beginnings of a left-right divide, government opposition, if you know what I mean, as opposed to the major party of government and the major party of opposition has always been two cheeks of the same arse.
But are they talking about a political spectrum that's closely aligned to the a European model, or are they actually talking about the political infrastructure of governance, which is to say that it's like a lot, we're more, we've become more pluralistic in actual governing rather than actually just a large blocking voting.
Well, if that's the case, they're 30 years too late. You know what I mean? The analysis is off by 30 years because we've always had to be pluralistic ever since the formation of the Progressive Democrats and the end of single party government in Ireland. But I mean, if that's their read on it, I'm giving them a little bit of credit in sort of saying that surely if they mean what's happened in this election, they mean that finally the split is probably not between two centre-right parties. It's between people who believe this and people who believe that. People who will vote for more tax cuts and money in their pocket, and people who will vote for progressive legislation and investment in infrastructure and investment in society. And that's finally going to be the political divide here, rather than who your great-grandfather shot at in the Civil War.
Yeah, which is fantastic. And Saoirse McHugh actually was talking about this when she was interviewed, I think it was joe.ie, and she said, well, what the left need to do is they need to collate, or they need to form informal coalitions where they can come together and form a less of a scattered approach to some of the policies that Fianna Fáil, Fine Gael actually push forward, and start having, say, like a shadow minister, sharing shadow cabinets across the left spectrum, which is like a fantastic idea, and I think that's something that the left should do. But it kind of brings us into the problem with the left that has always been in Irish politics, which is fragmentation. And Alan, you're going to talk about that, aren't you?
Yeah. You've so this is the last topic that we wanted to talk about, which was that, like, basically, like what you guys just outlined is that in a lot of other countries, like in especially in like the UK, it's just a recent example, that they can, you know, if you want to vote left, you can vote Labour, like for now anyway. So whereas in Ireland, if you wanted to vote left, like it is a more like fragmented situation that we have here. And like obviously the like vote left, transfer left hashtag was a really kind of celebrated slogan of this election. But for me, I just kind of thought it like demonstrated how like slightly messy the situation is. So I just kind of want to ask both of you, like, what do you think that this sort of general fragmentation in the left and the fact that we just have like so many different parties, do you think that this has sort of held back that this kind of change in Ireland? Do you think it's been a problem? And then I also wanted to ask you about why you decided on your party and like why you think that why you would convince others that your party is the best party in the left. So Peter, if you want to answer first, and then Kevin, you can come in.
Yeah, I suppose the first item on the agenda for our leftist coalition is the split, like, and it's always a cliche, but it's been true. And one of the things is like on the left of the political spectrum, right across the way, like we've only been too eager to play up to that stereotype. And you see it every single time. Like, just look at the go on Twitter, look at the hashtag vote left, transfer left, and the comments underneath every single tweet are going to be, yeah, but Labour aren't left.
Such a good point.
You know, or the Greens aren't left, or Sinn Féin haven't ruled out going into government with Fianna Fáil. They're not real left. Like, we're so eager to cannibalise each other. And I remember after our very successful local election, I remember being told by an activist for one particular left-wing grouping saying that, like, My votes didn't count because they were only people who usually vote Fianna Fáil or Fine Gael voting Green this time. And so, like, do leftist votes only count if you rob them off of other left parties?
Yeah,
like,
is
that what it is? Like,
pure voting.
It's like we don't have time left in this country, either with our own, you know, localized problems like housing, healthcare, childcare, terrible state of public transport, or with the global problems of climate crisis and biodiversity loss. We don't have time for leftist purity. There's a real possibility of people anywhere to the left of the spectrum coming together and actually you know, working together. But like, people have to be, and they really have to be willing to forgive a lot and ignore a lot and put up with stuff. And like, we've always been a party of compromise, sometimes too much to our own detriment, mm-hmm. in a big way. And we are just right across the whole left of the spectrum. We're going to have to just stop the bullshit and just, I think the idea, if we don't get into a government, if we don't have a strong left-leaning voice in government, and if it is a grand coalition of Fianna Fáil, Fine Gael, and say, you know, right-leaning independence or local issue independence, mm-hmm. keeping them in there, I mean, who wouldn't want a shadow cabinet with Eamon Ryan as environment minister, with Piers Doherty as finance minister, with Eoghan O'Brien on housing, Richard Boyd Barrett on anything? The guy can talk about anything. He's fantastic. Yeah. Like, you know, like who wouldn't on the left want to see that? And there will be people out there like going like, ah, sure, look, the Green Party, just the gardening section of Fine Gael. You know, they're just Fianna Fáil on bicycles. It's like, well, you know, cut it out, like, you know, just stop it, because we're not going to grow, we're not going to change anything. We have an actual chance to really, you know, carpe diem right here, like, to seize the day, mm-hmm. and it's going to require an awful lot of people just putting their leftist purity to one side. And one of the things that we get all the time, like, I remember seeing it in, like, in comments around Saoirse McHugh's interviews with Joe.ie and with RTE and everything, going like, oh, Saoirse's brilliant, she's fantastic, she's such a progressive young lefty, but why did she join a party with such terrible policies? Going like, you've never read any of our policies. Like, you've never read, if you do a policy analysis, we're very clearly left. You know, mm-hmm. if you look at the political compass based on policies alone, I know they're not flawless, but we're to the left of Sinn Féin and just slightly to the right of Solidarity and square on with People mm-hmm. Before Profit. You disagree. Yeah, you know yeah. what I mean? You would, like, yeah. absolutely. But yeah. like, there's...
It depends how you define left.
But let's put it this way. We're not a centre-right neoliberal party, like, you know, but, and that's policy. Sure, there are some people who vote Green who don't, you know, don't carry the little red book in their pockets and mm-hmm. don't believe in seizing the means of production. But, you know, the policies should speak for themselves. And to answer the second question, that's one of the reasons I'm in the Greens, is the policies, for me, they do speak for themselves. They make a lot of sense to me. I didn't join. I've always been an environmentalist. I've always been an activist that was involved in housing and homelessness protests in Dublin for years. I work with older people. But when I got a phone call off Eamon Ryan asking me if I'd be interested in joining the Green Party to run in an election, I read over all the policies and I just thought, yeah, this makes sense. I don't disagree with anything here. And anything I do disagree with, which is fine, because disagreement is healthy. That's the other thing that really pisses me off about mm-hmm. some voice on the left. I remember Breed Smith from People Before Profit, a fantastic politician, a wonderful climate activist. I think she's absolutely brilliant. I think the world of her, genuinely. But she started talking about how there's a big argument to the Greens about going into government. You know, it's terrible. Some people are raging. It's like, first of all, there's not, because we haven't discussed it yet. Mm-hmm. And second of all, so what if there is? Like, do yous not argue?
Yeah.
You know, is that not something yous do? Like, because mm-hmm. parties should have these discussions.
Yeah,
you have to have these arguments. Trash it out. Like.
Yeah, yeah.
Not every single party on the left, not every single party on the left was pro-choice 10 years ago. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And that's just one evolution that we've all had to go through. And, you know, we got there and we kind of have a unified approach to that one as well. Now, listen, I joined the Greens because it made sense to me, because I was asked to do it. And any policy I disagree with, because we're such a grassroots party, I have the opportunity to change. And I genuinely enjoy it. And it's an easy task to go and knock on the doors and ask someone to vote for you because you believe in what you're doing.
Mm-hmm. Fantastic.
Sorry, just to jump in quickly. So a sort of like coalition or like a large shadow cabinet of the left is something that like the Greens would definitely be like really behind.
If the opportunity doesn't present itself to get into government with a significant program for government that promises substantial change and the climate yeah. action that we need, then for us, with only 12 seats in the Dáil, we think a unified voice in opposition is absolutely vital. We're not ruling anything in or out, but we firmly believe in working together, whether that's on the government benches or the opposition benches. There's absolutely no point in freezing people out. There's no point in shutting people out. And one of the things that, like, I was out for a drink with Eamon Ryan last night, and he was actually saying, like, we don't believe in the nonsense that Fine Gael and Fianna Fáil have been doing, trying to shut Sinn Féin out. Like, it's undemocratic. It doesn't respect the mandate that party's been given. Mm-hmm. And there's no point in having that approach to politics. You know, we don't have time for that.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, yeah, to answer your first question about fragmentation, absolutely, fragmentation of the left has held back the left for a long time. It's almost, like, you'd almost be tempted to say sometimes it's deliberate. Like, it's so damaging, and it's got, yeah. and it's put the cause so far back, and it's particularly bad in Ireland. Like, I lived in 5 years in Scotland. At no point were we this I talked to people all over the political divide on the left in Scotland. No problem. Hung out, went for pints and stuff like that. It's a lot more volatile in Ireland.
Okay.
But I also think that that's also partly a consequence that there was not that much to play for until now, until this election. The left wing surge as well. I won't call it just the Sinn Féin surge. A lot of people were just content to talk about comparing each other's own fantasy world and basically falling out with each other if the exact shape of it didn't match up with each other, because that's all they really had. You know what I mean? It's, you know, PVP having a go at the Shinners, the Workers' Party having a go at the Shinners, the IRSP having a go at everybody, because there was no point to there was never the option to, if we actually all band together and kind of work together and have one big united Republican left movement, we could take power in this country. That wasn't that was never a thing. Now it is. And I hope this is my genuine hope. I think if this surge, this demonstration, that we, like, one big left wing push, that we can have one big party or one big movement to put the working class in this country in the driving seat, it will kind of encourage a kind of more, a broader and more cohesive left to develop across. I'm not talking about one big party. Like, I'm not talking about drowning out the Greens or anything like that. I am talking about one big movement, if you know what I mean. And I think that's important. And I think we're yet to see the consequences of this election. I believe that they're going to be far-reaching. One of them, I hope, is that it kind of brings that kind of, what's the word? There's a kind of religious word for ecumenical approach to left wing politics in Ireland. Why Sinn Féin? I'm a lifelong Republican. Why Sinn Féin? Sinn Féin, in my mind, are the party of the working class of Ireland. We're the party that will put working people in control and on both sides of the border. We're the biggest vehicle for change, for real left-wing democratic socialist change, and I think that needs to be recognised. And we're kind of like the broad equivalent of what the Labour Party was at one point in the UK. Hopefully it can be again, please God, in Ireland, if you know what I mean. And I think that comes from, that's not really a Sinn Féin thing. That's more of a left republicanism thing for a long time. Even back to, like, way back, hundreds of years, even like kind of like the proto-republicans had like relations with the Chartist movement in England, and there was always that kind of like go between, and there was always a difference, you know,
between, and internationalism,
yeah,
too,
kind yeah, of. But there was always an equivalence, like, whereas like the left in England grew up around a trade union movement and kind of in mining towns and stuff like that. In Ireland, we didn't really have the mines. We didn't really have the thing. What we had is lots of, we had urban poor factory workers, and we had small farmers. And we needed the Republican movement. Its basic point at left republicanism was essentially to unite those two large sections of the country, of the Irish people, into one force and kind of move forward together. We've had historically a lot less success in getting into power than the Labour Party, but do you know what? Let this be the start.
Yeah.
Let this be the start when we start here. Winning.
Well, like, I mean, I think that a lot of that is to do with the fact that Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael have really been, you know, they've kind of been they've been everything and nothing to everybody and no one. So they've kind
we
of been able to
who you want
exactly.
To be
and Fianna Fáil is actually the more adept at that, I think. Yeah. Of kind of like often kind of like subsuming some of the kind of like good press of its minor coalescing partner and kind of grifting people into thinking that they are the same when they are actually completely not. So, like, I mean, I wanted to kind of talk while we're going on about leftists. Fragmentation, like some of the reservations that are actually coming that have been coming out against Sinn Féin, and Helen will follow up with some of the reservations that some people have with the Greens.
Mm-hmm.
When Sinn Féin is confronted with some of the connections it had to violent actions in the past, mm-hmm. what is the answer to that that isn't disrespectful and actually acknowledging some of the issues that may have tied it to maybe some sort of like brutal murders, for example? Like, I mean, even if it did happen a very long time ago and during partition and in
a war, I think the answer for it in my mind is one. I've been asked by particularly British journalists. They were phoning me up. I do press officer to kind of thing. I'm like, why are young people voting for the IRA? I was like, they're not voting for the IRA. They're voting for democratic socialist policies, and Sinn Féin represents that change. If you know what I mean. I think look, the conflict was an incredibly messy conflict. I think with the kind of it's been over 20 years now since the Good Friday Agreement. I think we're moving towards an understanding of the conflict that is a bit more nuanced and a bit more kind of understanding of how it happened and what happened and what each people did. I think the people who are the most anti-Sinn Féin now, that kind of like middle class or middle-aged people who kind of grew up through it, their views were shaped by a media that was pretty content to blame the Republican movement for practically everything, even, you know, the Dublin and Monaghan bombings were blamed not on the UVF and British proxies that did it, but on the Republican movement. I was in a conversation with a mate, a friend or acquaintance recently, who thought Dublin and Monaghan had been an IRA attack, and I was just like, how did you possibly get that impression? But then of course he got that impression because it was like the whole narrative around it was that these Nordies are coming down here blaming us. I think the 30-year rule, where the British and Irish states have to release their records bit by bit, is kind of proving like kind of long-standing arguments that there was a dirty war, collusion was a real thing, and the British state were basically arming and training loyalist proxies and to murder Catholics in response to things.
But even like it's all people's perception.
Yeah, the point that I was going to get to at the end of it was so that nowadays, rather than, you know, 20 years ago, a lot of people have a kind of more balanced view. We can see that everybody had blood in their hands, including the sovereign state washed their hands of their Northern citizens at the start of the conflict and said, mm-hmm. basically, well, we're not defending yous. Good luck, and guess who steps in to fill that void? Do you know what I mean? So I think
was it Charlie High? It was, wasn't it?
No, yeah. But you know what I mean.
Charles,
when everybody has blood in their hands and everybody's at fault, it's easier to kind of have a kind of mature. And that's kind of the spirit of the peace process as well. I think we've kind of forgotten about that. I think people kind of have to remember that, like, what the peace process was saying was, we are all the baddies in this room. Like,
yeah.
We all did, like, except maybe John Hume. He was
a little angel.
And even
angel,
like, the SDLP,
from heaven.
The SDLP were had a lot of fault in their hand as well. But there was, you know, like, everybody in that conflict was thing. And also, frankly, I think. People in the South have to start imagining themselves. Imagine what had you been born into Derry in 1957 and became of age during that, would you really not have been involved?
Yeah.
I mean,
people weren't as well, I mean, it is hard, like, especially, it is difficult to try and
yeah.
You know, acknowledge the like genuine fears that some people have about a connection to a military, and kind of trying to make sense of that on top of people being pissed off because people are saying, come at you black and tans. Like, it does seem very messy sometimes when you see a lot of people, and it is bad faith readings of nearly everything that's coming out when and, you know, some parts of it are bad readings, some parts of it are like ill-disciplined deputies saying stuff in front of cameras they probably shouldn't. It does seem to kind of, it is like, and not to be incredulous about it, but like, I mean, It is hard when you're trying to make sense of some of the genuine fears that some people have, and then trying to reject the whole "come out you black and tans" nonsense that was coming out after the election.
Are we talking about like Desi Ellis saying "come out you black and tans" at the count?
Personally,
I think "come out you black and tans" was a perfectly appropriate song, seeing as how vital a role it played in setting the thing. Month ago when it was fucking top of the charts?
But can I just interrupt with that? Like, "Come Out You Black and Tans" is a song that is older than the Provisional IRA. Yeah, it's older than the Troubles. It was written by Dominic Bean. It is actually, it's not about the IRA. It is a song about a drunk man roaring at Protestants.
Yeah.
Like, that's, you know. Yeah.
People saying it as an endorsement.
I've seen that interpretation of it. I would disagree, because it's the whole thing, it's a parody. It kind of is a parody, but then you'd kind of have to then look at
their shitposting
of Dominic Bean's discovery, like, which are
But he was singing about his father, Stephen Bean, who was not involved in fighting the Black and Tans, exactly, but he was just roaring at the loyalists who lived on his street. Like,
great tune though. I wouldn't
sing it at a count center. But it's a belter.
I think. I wouldn't make too much of it is the thing, but I think "Come Out You Black and Tans" it did play a big role in the kind of the dialogue, the dialectics around this election, the whole Waterford thing, the whole up the rare thing. To me, that was disappointing because it moved, like, I wanted the headlines to be about Sinn Féin surge.
Yeah.
The left are now the biggest bloc in Ireland, and instead we were having headlines about. Like, now,
the problems are coming.
What I will say is that those comments were made in a pub after a massive election. I will hold my hands up and say I am not the most careful person either.
But in vino veritas, though, like the worrying thing for me is not that he said it. Right, it's not that David Cullinan said it, and I'm disappointed because, like, I've got cousins involved in David Cullinan's campaign. But my family's from Waterford. I think he's a fantastic parliamentarian. I think he's a great guy. I really like David Cullinan. I am disappointed that he said it, but like the fact of the matter is, you got a room full of hundreds of people, and when he says it, they're on their feet, like they're roaring, they're chanting, they're clapping, with the greatest respect in the world to Sinn Féin's manifesto and your very progressive social democratic policies, like. You also have a bunch of people who join Sinn Féin, who campaign with Sinn Féin, and who go out and knock on doors for David Cullinan in Waterford, and who go to the pub with them afterwards because they're armchair Republicans. You know what I mean? Like, you do. You can't deny it. Like, you can't deny that there's a part to that as well. Like, and a big part of it, and it's like going back to the peace process. A big part of it is openly admitting that, and just like, yeah, absolutely, it is not only disappointing that David Cullinan said that, disappointing that the whole room were up in arms cheering him.
I wouldn't say we're armed, like, the definition of an armchair Republican is that they don't come out canvassing, you know what I mean? But I don't know what more to say. Do you know what I mean? It's just very.
I have to come in here. I have to come in here because we have to get round to our time of. Peter, I just want to talk to you a little bit about, just like maybe some reservations that people have about the Greens. So, like, in the first ever meeting of the Green Party, your like flyer for it said that it was going to be a political party that was radically opposed to both capitalism and socialism. So I'm just like wondering where that leaves you, like what kind of is the ideological base of the Greens? And would you like stand by that statement now as a party, or what do you think of it?
No, we wouldn't, because that was nearly 40 years ago. That was when we were the Ecology Party of Ireland, and the roots of the Ecology Party of Ireland were squarely in feminism, like squarely 100%. It was a feminist model, so it rejected the binary. It rejected the idea, not the gender binary. That wasn't the topic. That wasn't the kind of the discourse at the time. But rejected the political binary in a big way. There was this sort of idea that we would be neither left nor right, but green. And at the time when the prevalent political movement in Europe and for most of the Western world was social democratic, that was fine, you know, because you didn't have Thatcherite neoliberalism. You didn't have the re-rise of the far right. You had an entire generation of people who remembered the spectre of fascism. So, you know, the idea of right wing was it was a purely economical thing, mm-hmm. and that we would not be like collectivists, we would not be communists, we wouldn't be socialists, but neither would we be capitalists, neither would we be libertarians. You know, we had this kind of feminist ideal, but like any party should, we've had to shift with the political climate. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, When I first sat down with Eamon Ryan when he was inviting me to join the Green Party and be a candidate, one of the first things he said was, "We're a party of the left. Like we're not leftists. We're not left wing. We're not looking to. I mean, we are looking to renationalise services. That's something we agree with Sinn Féin on. We need to renationalise waste services, and we need to seriously invest in public transport and make it, you know, frequent, fast, reliable, and eventually free for people. That has to be through nationalisation. But like." At the end of the day, we're not radical Trotskyites or anything like that either. But
I don't think any Trotskyites radical.
No, that's true. But we're a party of the left. We would certainly consider ourselves certainly to the left of other centre left parties or left of centre parties. I'm certainly on the left wing of the Green Party. There's no doubt about that from a personal point of view. But like any political party, we have a broad church of people mm-hmm. who subscribe to many different political views. But if you want to get down to a nuts and bolts approach and what are the policies and what do we stand for, it's very much a person-centred, climate-focused leftist party, or like a party of the left. Now, we don't espouse those views in a way that sort of, you know, screams leftist purity, if you know what I mean. But it's not something like, I don't stand by this idea of neither left nor right, but green. The political climate has shifted in such a way that you more or less inevitably have to pick a side. And right is not right for us.
I think what a lot of people, kind of like my side of the thing, and I recognise there are lots of absolutely brilliant leftists, I would count you in that. Saoirse McHugh, oh my god, please join Sinn Féin if you're listening. That would be awesome. But
Conway Walsh is going to kill you.
I know. To be frank, is Eamon Ryan on the left himself personally? Because like his track record would suggest that he would.
But like, what's his track record like? You know what I mean? I hate the fact that we just get pigeonholed into this all the time. I actually feel sorry for Eamon around this time of the narrative, around election time mm-hmm. and all that, because our leadership is, we didn't even have a leader until the late 1990s. We were a party that existed without a leader until the late 1990s when Trevor Sargent became the first leader. And then he promised he wouldn't lead the Greens into government, so he resigned when the membership opted to go into government. John Gormley became the leader. Eamon Ryan is only the third leader of a very, in relative terms, young political party. Mm-hmm. And he's absolutely handcuffed when it comes to making comments, like, you know what I mean? He does not have the constitutional power that Micheál Martin has to stand up and say, we will not talk to Sinn Féin. Yeah. Oh, actually, I've changed my mind. We will talk to Sinn Féin. So you have a leader who is, he's a fantastic statesman. He has been, like, I genuinely can't speak highly enough of him because of how he carried this party when we had absolutely no nationally elected reps. We only had 12 councillors with no state funding. Guy brought us back like a phoenix from the flames, and he just gets pigeonholed because he's from South Dublin. He has the same accent as people.
But it's like, more for me it's more the Fianna Fáil Green coalition. It's not so much his background or anything like that. It's more the role that he played in that coalition.
We do have to sort of like start to wrap it up. But Kevin, you have actually addressed the question that I was going to ask. So thank you for taking on the role of podcast host. But, I was just going to, obviously you get asked about your record a lot, but I guess, and you've kind of addressed it already in the podcast, but I just wanted to have you briefly comment on like the recent selling of O'Devney Gardens, just because it was such a recent thing.
Yeah, again, something that really gets pigeonholed. Not everybody in the Green Party on Dublin City Council voted for that. You know mm-hmm. what I mean? Like, and to be honest with you, I understand the rationale of the councillors who did vote for it, because, you know, there is a definite thought that this was the only show in town, that the Department for Housing, and I say this as a sitting county councillor, it's been mm-hmm. one of the greatest frustrations of my political career to date since last May, is that national legislation has completely and totally hamstrung local authorities when it comes to speculating for themselves and developing land themselves and becoming players in the rental market or the affordable purchase market themselves. Like, and it's 9 years of Fine Gael government has done this. And to be honest with you, I don't fault my colleagues on Dublin City Council who voted against it, and I don't fault my colleagues on Dublin City City Council who voted for it because they reckoned that this was the best deal they were going to get out of it. Now, look, an election has happened. Things might change and we may look back. We may look back and think it was the right decision. We may look back and think, actually, if we just held off until the election and Taoiseach Mary Lou McDonald changed everything, you know, it could have been totally different. But look, who was to know in that instance? And if I was sitting in that room, and I'm not lying to you, I genuinely don't know what way I would have swung. Some of my colleagues voted against it, some voted for it. The problem was that there was a concerted campaign to tar them all with the same brush. And like, I remember getting abuse on Twitter, like going, like, you know, ah, you sold O'Devany Gardens. Like, mate, I'm in a different local authority. Like, I'm not even in that county. I don't sit in that room. I didn't take part in that vote. And of my colleagues who did take part in that vote, they didn't even all vote for it. Like, so, you know, give us a break.
Okay. So we have to finish up there. Obviously, we could probably keep talking about this forever. But thank you so much to Peter and Kevin for coming in today. They were really interesting conversations. I think it's really, really exciting to like hear about that this could be like the moment for a unified left movement is really fabulous. So yeah, bye to both of you.
Bye bye.
Thanks a million.
Thanks very much for having us on again.
And this podcast was produced and edited by Ola Mayepidunmi and hosted by Helen and Glenn. And we are Casement's Leftovers, and we hope you tune in again. Thank you.
Bye.